much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Well, we're always aiming to fix that. That is the goal here in this segment. Every Wednesday, we talk to one of the authors of the series being published in the Pensacola News Journal on the 200th anniversary of Escambia County. Joining us now this morning, we have Margo Stringfield. She is an archaeologist at the University of West Florida Archaeology Institute. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, Margo.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, absolutely. And by the way, I just want to mention, because it's something that people might wonder, Brian Rucker has written several of these or co-written several of these pieces, but Brian teaches at this exact time, and so we have not been able to have him on. Hopefully, as his class schedule ends, we'll be able to get him on before the 200th for at least one of his articles. Now, you and he co-wrote this one. It was about persons who were relatively famous, okay, from 1821, and there were four people in this week's article. You wrote about the women, he wrote about the men, so let's ask you about the ones that, you know, you wrote about. First question, the woman, Ms. Ham, who's from Mobile, how do you say her name? G-E-N-N-I-E-V-E is an odd spelling to me. How do you say her name?
Well, Genevieve is how I say her name,
okay.
And I say it in the sense of how Americans would have said it. But her name is spelled almost a different way in every document that's associated with her.
Huh.
But I chose to spell her name as it appears on her tombstone in St. Michael's Cemetery. And this is not unusual to find people's names spelled differently in different documents. Other people were writing things down, and they would tend to perhaps not be consistent in their spelling.
Huh. It's the kind of stuff that seems obvious, but I, as a non-historian, that's fascinating to me that you would have. Obviously, this complicates the matter of doing historical research because the same person may show up with two, three, four different spellings, and it's hard to be sure that that's, in fact, the same person. Interesting. But she's actually a really fascinating character because she was black, but she was a free black woman, but she also was a slave owner. Is that right?
Yes, she was a free woman of color. She likely was of mixed parentage.
Okay.
And so she was free, and it would appear that she had been a free woman of color for quite some time. Certainly she was not enslaved in 1820 when the census was taken. And she did own a slave, and that's not uncommon for free people of color to also be slave owners. And it is not uncommon that people would free their slaves upon their death. In Pensacola, that was very common. And it was also a nod to how she thought of this woman because she left her wardrobe. And today, we might not think of that as a very valuable asset, but when she died, it was a very valuable asset. People made care to leave their clothing to specific people.
Huh. And especially her, because she was, what, a seamstress, right? So obviously her clothing would have been
the
highest quality, right?
I think it would have been. And I think that she, given her socioeconomic standing at the time, she probably was making clothes for women that that could afford her clothes, say, in a really nice garment.
And I know one of the things that you mentioned in the article is that Zelina, the slave that she freed when she passed away, it's one of those records of, we often don't have records of enslaved persons because they maybe didn't have public need to record them, they weren't named, and so that's a unique element too, as we know she was here, even though a lot of times those people were invisible to history, right?
That is right, yes.
So the other woman that you wrote about, and again, there were four people this week, but you wrote about two of them. The other two were Brian's folks. Maria Anagiche, is that how you say her last name?
Well, I'm saying it Anagiche.
I gotcha.
And
right.
I consulted Dan Helms, who is the chief of Santa Rosa Creek Indian Tribe, because it is a very unusual name. And he noted that often these names were made up of different components of the language, so it, the name itself was quite complex. But she too was a strong woman, and she married someone who was interacting with her people, on a regular basis. And I think in the case of this, we don't often see Native Indians reflected either,
right,
in the historic record. But she had a court case, and she was trying to hang on to her property. And we know a little bit more of her. That's how we know that her husband did assist Bernardo de Galvez, is because it's stated in the American State Papers when she presses her claim to land. And so there's a lot of information that you can find in legal documents that fleshes out a life that, again, you might have no idea that this person walked across the landscape of our county.
And she's interesting to people may not realize the connection, but her husband was Antonio Garzon, a Spanish interpreter. And that's because mm-hmm. she held onto this land, the area of land that we today know as a particular place where there's a bridge and a lot of commuters at the moment, is named after her husband, mm-hmm. right?
It is, and she was not successful in hanging on to her land,
aww.
But the name stuck, and
right.
the name stuck through time. And so, again, most people are probably not thinking about her as they drive across the bridge, but she certainly is firmly attached to it.
Yeah, that's very cool. So the Garzon Point area was named for the Spanish interpreter who worked with the Indians and actually wound up marrying Maria Aniguche, did I say it the way you say it?
I'm as close as I can pronounce it, yes.
Very cool. Well, this is so fascinating. And again, there's two other people listed in the article if you want to go read it at the PNJ.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Forsythe,
mm-hmm.
who was involved with the first textile mill here in the area, and also Henry Brackenridge, and he helped cultivate the Naval Live Oaks, right?
He did, and I think what's fascinating about these two men is you can go to the Naval Live Oaks and take a walk. Take yourself off to Arcadia. You can literally take a road trip back into our history and learn more at the historic sites that we have right here that link us to our past.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I imagine some people would make the observation that you can find out about Forsythe because of the mill. You can find out about Breckenridge because of the Naval Live Oaks. The two prominent women, you have to do a little bit more digging to find out about them. But very
well, you do. You do, but you can go to historic St. Michael's Cemetery and visit with Miss Hamm.
Absolutely. Well, wonderful stuff. And again, this is what we're doing every Wednesday, is we're trying to have one of the authors of the UWF series leading up to the 200th anniversary of Escambia County, Margot Stringfield. She is an archaeologist at UWF Archaeology Institute, specializes in cemeteries. And Margot, thanks for the information. Thanks for helping contribute to this series, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, thank you so much.